welcome back to the Time Shifters podcast. We are back to probably a little more normal sounding than we were the last time. I'm just here with Matt. Welcome back.
Hi.
Back on the microphones, not the open mac. I didn't think it did, or open mac, open mic. There you go. Not a mac to be seen, unfortunately. Anyway, welcome back, everyone. Thanks very much for joining me again there, Matt. We had a fun discussion last time with Steve, and we were just talking about time travel, I knew it was going to happen after we were done recording the next day. They're like, boy, we could have talked about that. We should have talked about this. We didn't mention this. There was all kinds of things I thought of after we were finished recording.
Yeah, once we turned off the mics, that's when we all went, Lost in Space. That is probably one of the worst movies ever made and worst time travel movies ever made.
I wanted to do something a little new, different this time. We haven't done it up to this point. We've kind of left a lot of the current events and everything off the burner. We haven't talked about anything. Yeah. There's a couple things that came up recently that I wanted to mention, and I think we're going to try to do this from now on, just when something interesting comes up. The first one, and I only wanted to bring it up because as soon as I posted it in our Facebook group, you were the first comment. And it was the news that James Cameron is indeed going to go ahead and do an Avatar sequel or sequels.
Yeah, I keep hearing two and three, definitely, possibly a fourth.
And I think your comment was, I think what I posted is like something about that apparently he's remembered, even though no one else has.
Right.
And yeah, I can't say I'm really that interested in any more Avatar.
I didn't even see the first one.
Really?
Yeah, the commercials didn't pull me in. I didn't really care. I'm not that big a James Cameron fan, and so I didn't even have that, oh, I want to go see this director's work. So it was more of, it came out and it looked nice, but I wasn't into what I saw. And then everyone was coming back saying, it looked great.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
the story is one you've heard 100 times over, and so I was just like, all right, I'll pass. And then it was one of those movies that, you know, it was out forever. It made all the money in the world, and I feel it was overexposed because a year later, no one cared.
Yeah.
It fell off the face of the earth. Like, everyone saw it, but no one wanted to see it again.
That's kind of how I felt when I saw this news that, oh, James Cameron and Avatar sequel. I was like, oh, yeah, Avatar. It really was this movie you just immediately forget.
Right, and I wonder if it's kind of doomed to fail because of that. They think it's going to work because it made so much money. They're thinking, hey, if it only makes half, it's still going to make $1.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to do that. I could be wrong, but I just think it's one of those movies that everybody went and saw, loved it at the time, and then 10 minutes later they were like, okay.
Yeah.
And now it's just going to be like, well, the second one's out. Yeah, who cares?
Well, I think the first one had a lot of the, it was the first time technology kind of syndrome.
Yeah.
The same thing, Star Wars had it when Lucas developed Star Wars. It was technology used for the very first time. Jurassic Park, I think, had a little bit of that.
Yeah.
You know, going back to like the original Tron, even. So I think that's where Avatar had a lot of its, this has never been done before.
Yeah.
And now it has. And so now you actually have to come up. So the story didn't matter really for that movie because it was just a showcase of this new technology and how they could do it and make it the 3D, the best 3D, all this stuff. And so now that that's all kind of become commonplace, now you actually got to come up with a story to pull someone in because you're not going to wow us
right with
the effects.
And it's interesting, those three movies you bring up as an example, because you look at something like Jurassic Park, and while that technology is everywhere, each of the sequels got less and less interesting.
Yeah.
But the first one is still really good because of the suspense. Star Wars, you know, was a product of its technology, but the story was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Tron looks very cheap now, but you're still kind of pulled into the story and the characters. Avatar was the other way around.
Right.
You got pulled into the technology, but the story wasn't anything special. It was just, it was there. It was, you know, you could name a bunch of movies that is just like it.
So it'll be curious to see, A, whether it actually happens. I guess James Cameron is kind of at the point that he could produce it, whether a studio wants to back it or not. But I think he's still going to need a studio to actually get it out there.
Yeah. I don't think he'll have a problem doing that. I mean, he's such a name at this point that, you know, if he says, I want to do this, someone will say, yeah, we'll help you out.
Right. Yeah, we will see. We'll see if it actually happens, and then if it does happen, yeah, I could see getting maybe one more out there. Maybe he'll go ahead and do it. Maybe a studio, like you said, will go ahead and back him. But I just don't, yeah, like you were saying, I just don't see it being this phenomenon that like the first one was. And so if we see a sequel, that's probably the only sequel we're going to see.
I hope so.
Well, unless the story is really good, unless they come up with an original or, well, original. Good luck with that. a less told story, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing is studios, they love franchises now. They'll do anything to push a franchise. And if this is a franchise that they think they can grow, they'll jump over each other to try to get to it.
Yeah, good point. Well, the other thing that happened recently, and all through last year, we had a lot of celebrity deaths. And we didn't really mention any of them. We had one that was kind of important here just recently, and it had to do with a franchise that's come up in numerous discussions here on the podcast, including just now. And that was the death of Carrie Fisher, who is, of course, still playing Princess Leia in the Star Wars franchise. Now, she was just seen in the most recent Star Wars film, The Force Awakens. I've heard that her parts were filmed and complete for, was it eight? Is that?
The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi. The rumors were that she was going to be integral to the story for nine, if I have my numbers right.
Yes.
So the kind of question that I wanted to ask you is, do you think they should, what were the options I suggested? Should they ignore the death and just completely, you know, not have the character, recast the character, or acknowledge that the character has passed?
Yeah, this is something I've thought about a lot, and a lot of what has shaped my opinion has to do with, one, who Carrie Fisher was as a person and her personality, and two, who the character is as a personality. And they've already said they won't CGI her. That's off the table.
They're no not Grand Moff Tarkins.
Right, exactly. And which is good. I don't think you can do that because, one, it doesn't look that great. And two, I think it would weird a lot of people out and make people feel awkward.
That uncanny valley.
Yeah. And because also you lose a lot of the nuance of what an actor brings. Like you can CG anything, but is that the way Carrie would have done it?
Right.
Is that how the facial expression she would have given? Is that the tone of her voice? So with who Carrie Fisher was as such a unique personality, and you know, she kind of just marched to the beat of her own drum, and she wasn't all about making people happy. She was about empowering people and saying what was on her mind and didn't have a filter, and watching her interviews were always so much fun. And you can't ignore her death. You can't just say, well, the character's not it anymore, especially since they said her role in episode 9 was going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot recast because it would look too weird. You'd be like, oh, right, that's General Organa. I forgot. It would take you out of the bubble that you're in when you're watching these movies. I think the only logical thing to do is to kill the character off. And you probably have to do that off screen, but you need to acknowledge that there's a reason why General Organa isn't fighting anymore. Because she has, if you look at everything Leia Organa has been through and that she's still fighting, she has, she failed to save her planet and the life of her father. She kept fighting.
Mm-hmm.
She discovers that she is the daughter of Darth Vader. She keeps fighting. Her brother abandons her. She keeps fighting. The man she loves abandons her. She keeps fighting. Her son falls to the dark side. She keeps fighting. The man she loves is murdered by her son. She keeps fighting. If you didn't know there was a spoiler to The Force Awakens out there, sorry, but it's been over a year.
Yeah, it's been a while now.
She keeps fighting. So you can't even say, well, just have her go retire happily into the sunset. It would make no sense. If there's a war going on, Leia Organa's going to keep fighting. If there is a struggle, if there's something to resist, to say that she's retiring or she's off to the side, or even to say, oh, she is still fighting, but you just missed her. Right. Oh, she's on Coruscant. We go to Coruscant. Oh, she's on Tatooine now. Like, it doesn't make sense. That's a disgrace and a dishonor to Carrie Fisher and to the character. So if she can't be around, then just don't have the character around. Everybody's mourning her death, so let's mourn her through the character.
I agree. I think recasting would be a mistake, obviously. The CG thing, yeah, that couldn't have worked. I think the best and simplest thing to do is do 8, however it is you were already planning to do 8. Use her, the scenes that she had finished, and when it comes to 9, you just work in a line somewhere that says, look, I've been in charge ever since General Organa died or was killed. That's all you, and that's really all you need.
Yeah,
is you just write in something early on that acknowledges that that character is no more.
Right, or because I keep wondering, because Han Solo died in Episode 7, I keep wondering, is the plan to kill Luke Skywalker in Episode 8, and then maybe in Episode 9, Leia dies, and they kind of systematically kill them off and kind of get that next generation to whatever where they want this, because they're not stopping at Episode 9. They're going to keep going forever as long as they can.
Especially now that it's under the Disney umbrella. Exactly. They're not going to let it go.
So it makes me wonder if they were just going to kind of give each character some kind of big moment. Because that scene in The Force Awakens between Han and Kylo Ren is probably my favorite. It was very suspenseful. I was on the edge of my seat because I remember thinking, they're not going to do it, right? This isn't really going to happen, because he felt very vulnerable. And Harrison Ford, the great actor that he is, played that up so well. And I keep wondering if they were going to have that for Mark Hamill. And has this changed that plan, if that was what they were going to do? Because a title like The Last Jedi kind of raises a red flag for me. Is he going to die?
Right.
So does this change things? Maybe now they'll do something to kill off her character, and maybe Mark Hamill gets the bigger role in Episode 9. I don't know. This is all speculation. This is just me guessing at 100 different scenarios. So that's where they could take it. They have a lot of ways they could take it, but my hope is that they kill off the character to let the characters around mourn her as we mourn her.
Very good. The only other mention, I don't know how much of a fan of this particular actor you are, and I only edited my notes just today. I wasn't even going to mention it, but we just lost John Hurt.
Yeah, I'm quite a fan of his. He's one of those actors that you're like, have I seen him? Yes, you've seen him in 25 different things at least. He's been in everything.
He's one of those actors where I'm more likely to watch a movie if I see his name attached to it. Just so I could see John Hurt, even if it's a minor role or something, because it's just like he's sort of I compared him the other day. I was thinking to myself, and I was comparing him the other day, is like whenever you're watching a movie and John Hurt shows up, he's kind of like that, almost like the comfort food or the security blanket. Like, you know, no matter whether this movie, you don't know if this movie is going to be any good or not, but at least John Hurt's going to be in there, and it's somebody that you're familiar with.
Yes, and he'll probably have one of the better scenes in the movie. If it's a terrible movie, you'll love his scene. I compare him a lot, even though they're very different actors, to Bob Hoskins, because he would kind of pop up the same way.
Sure.
And you're just sort of like, well, that was a great scene around a terrible movie. Yeah. And yeah, John Hurt is that actor. He could play like the guy who would put his arms around you and make you feel good, or he could play a really scary villain and anything in between.
Yeah, and his roles, it's pretty amazing. If you look through some of his filmography, he'll go from a starring role to a kind of a bit player, back to a starring role. But he was just he hits me as one of those last few true actors where it's like, oh, you're paying me, I'll come and do the part. I'm a star, you know. Right. He was an actor. And that's probably one of the things I appreciated most about him, is someone gave him something and said, hey, here's a role you might like, and we'll pay you this much. And you're like, all right.
And he did his best.
Yeah, and he's going to give you 100%. He's not going to phone it in.
Right. The role of his I always think of is in V for Vendetta, where he's playing the president, emperor, whatever it is. Dictator, terrible human being.
Prime minister, whatever it is in that film.
Yeah, and he gives like a bunch of speeches in that. movie, and each one is just so much fun to watch, and his cadence and the way he would just his enunciation, and oh, it's just great.
Yeah. No, he's going to be missed because he was just – I definitely watched some bad movies because John Hurt was going to be – he actually did a Frankenstein movie.
As Frankenstein?
No.
As the monster, I mean?
No, not as the monster. It was – I'm trying to remember the – I should have looked it up. It's Frankenstein Unbound, I want to say it is.
Okay.
It's this mishmash of a film. He's from the future who travels back in time and meets Mary Shelley.
Okay.
And turns out that, you know, and a Dr. Frankenstein, and there's a Frankenstein monster, and he has to try to save Mary Shelley from the monster, and the monster and him get catapulted back into the future, and it is just a nightmare mishmash film. But it's John Hurt, you know?
Right. You'll watch it for that.
I watched it for John Hurt.
I can understand that.
It just out of morbid curiosity, you ought to try to look it up and,
sure,
and watch it. Just, and I think you'll sit there the whole time going, what in the hell is this? Well, from that, I want to go into, we actually got a couple emails that I wanted to read. I want to go ahead and some feedback and some emails that we got. I'll start with the oldest one. This one was left by someone called himself Polly. He actually left it as a comment on our website, which is not the preferred way of sending us any messages, but hey, he sent us a message, so I'm thankful for that. He was a new listener. Apparently, he says, hi, Christopher. I'm looking for a good sci-fi, comma, nerd, comma, Star Trek, comma, geek show. And he dialed up our podcast. He said his first look was our original series show. He's talking about where you watched Star Trek for the first time. Said it was good, but Matt has it all wrong.
Uh-oh.
We do not need more shows that linger on from episode to episode. I don't need to see Kirk or anyone else suffer so I can forget about my problems. We already have enough shows that act like a novel or spend too much time digging into the characters, life, inner feelings, hang-ups, etc. Definitely tired of who's killing who and who's sleeping with who shows. TOS was so great because it was episodic and that it didn't go too deep into each character. TNG, The Next Generation, did go a little too deep, although was watchable, sans the technobabble. We need shows with characters who, as in the TOS, can bounce back after a problem and continue moving forward, not dwell on their sorrows and pain. On your thoughts of the new movies, I agree. The first was watchable for the most part as it's Trek. The second was unnecessarily crap, pandering to the real Trekkies. Beyond? Well, it had a few good moments, but was way over the top, and I think it was still moving too fast for a Star Trek show/movie. He says, next up, I'm going to listen to your past, present, future show. I hope it's good, too. If so, I may listen to more. And the Godzilla episode is probably third. Godzilla, I recorded a conversation about two episodes about Godzilla. That's right. Oh, and he says the synopsis of the HBO Carnival doesn't look worth watching. Too many angel demon shows. Plus, if you notice, most shows are the same old thing, just in another place or someone else's life. Nothing new. The real problem we have today is too many channels and nothing to watch. That's all caps. Oops, sorry about that. Lost my composure for a second. Most TV series should just be a movie of the week and be done with it. He says, take care and thanks, and that's from Polly. So, excellent. Thank you very much for sending us your thoughts on that. Any comments about the TOS?
I mean, I don't disagree with his point of view. I mean, everybody is drawn into something different when you deal with screen media. For me, it's character. I like to know what's going on with the character and you know, how the last week's episode is affecting them, because for me I love to see character growth and development and keep going forward. Other people like to see, all right, we just had our adventure and we just saw how everything went, now let's wipe the slate clean and start again, and that's cool. It's almost like saying the episodes aren't exactly connected, but it's more of how would the crew deal with this situation, now how would they deal with that situation, rather than how do they deal with this situation, but you got to remember how the other situation affected them. It gets complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that added benefit of you can just jump right in at any episode and you'll be able to keep up. Whereas you'd be like, well, wait, why is that guy depressed? Because I saw another episode where he was very happy. Oh, well, you missed the three in between where he got depressed. And
right.
That's fine. But that's just what draws me in, is that constant growth. I like to start at shows from the beginning and follow them all the way to the end and just see, like, wow, where we started and where we ended are night and day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what does it for me.
I think I agree. I think it depends on the show. I've enjoyed both. Certainly, I mean, I've enjoyed a lot of the Star Treks in the Next Generation. And sometimes it's to the detriment of the story sometimes. There are occasions, don't they remember just two episodes back when they dealt with like almost the exact same thing?
Right.
And why don't they think about that? So it does damage sometimes if you look at it critically. If you yourself can't end that episode, the previous episode, and move on, and never think about that episode again because they're not. If you can't do that, then you can definitely find a lot of fault in some of the episodes and some of the stories. But on the flip side of the coin, there are many series, like you were saying, that has this beginning and this development. Right now, my wife and I are just knee-deep in The Expanse that's on Sci-Fi. And it was one of these shows where it starts out and it's really slow in the beginning and you're wondering what's going on. But by the end of the first season, you're like, what do you mean it's over? So now we're in the second season and it is literally, we're at the end of like, I don't want to wait a week.
Right.
And there is so much development. The characters are changing. You're learning who these characters are. And I think that's brilliant. That type of show wouldn't work as that episodic, we have an adventure and now it's over.
Right.
I guess it's just, there are episodes, there are shows for that. And there's other stories and other shows for the other. I think I like having both, I guess, in my life.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, the show I absolutely love is Quantum Leap, and they literally wipe the slate clean every week because he'd be in an entirely different place and time, and oh yeah, he has the Swiss cheese memory, so he doesn't remember what he did last time. And so I definitely enjoy both, but my preference would be to the character growth.
Okay, we got one other. This came to our email at timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com, and it's actually a familiar name. Again, going back to, we just had Steve from the previous incarnations of this podcast. Well, Floyd wrote a letter in to us. He said that he really enjoyed the time travel podcast with the three of us here discussing it. And it was good to see Steve back. I agree with Matt. The butterfly effect is an overlooked great time travel story. But he does disagree with Men in Black 3 and Terminator 3. He said he thought Men in Black 3 was a very fun movie, and Josh Brolin did a great job playing a younger Tommy Lee Jones. And that right there makes me think, you know what? I never saw Men in Black 3 because I don't remember that at all.
Josh Brolin did do an amazing Tommy Lee Jones impression. I just thought it would have been cooler if you didn't have Tommy Lee Jones in 2. I feel 3 suffers because of what 2 did.
Gotcha. Okay. As for T3, I thought it was very entertaining, especially the crane truck chase scene. I do, however, wish they had ended the series there. There's a couple of time travel stories you missed, as you mentioned you would on the podcast, that came to mind. One was the classic Time After Time. More on that in a minute here. And the other was the new series Timeless, which my wife and I really like. I wondered if Timeless came about by someone wanting to do something with all the period costumes the studio may have had in storage. if you want another guest from the past, he said, I'd love to make an appearance. I miss podcasting. Absolutely, Floyd. We will have you back soon. Timeless seemed to struck a chord there with you. Are you watching that?
No, I heard of it. A lot of people I follow on Twitter are talking about it, so I've heard of it through there. If I'm remembering the premise right, forgive me if I don't, it's people who are trying to go back in time and fix mistakes to time. I think somebody's screwing with time, but I could be completely wrong. But it kind of, from what I've seen in promos, it has a hand in like kind of a serious drama, but it also has a hand in like a fun comedy. The actors who are in it are things I've seen in stuff before. I can't remember anybody off the top of my head. But yeah, it looks interesting, and it looks to be like one of those things that I'll catch whenever it comes to like a Netflix or something.
No, okay, very cool. I've heard of it. Excuse me. I've heard of it, and I've seen people talk about it, but I've not really looked into it at all. We call ourselves time travel fans,
We can't get to everything. Such a huge category.
We need time travel in order to watch all the time travel. Speaking thereof, I discovered there was a series I was trying to discuss that sounded a lot like The Time Traveler's Wife that you were describing.
Okay.
The series, I finally figured out what it was. It was called A Journeyman. It was done in 2007. Starred Kevin McKidd and Gretchen Egolf. And Moon Bloodgood was a name I knew, and I couldn't think of her for the life of me. But as far as I can tell, it doesn't have any, from what I could find online, it doesn't have any connection to The Time Traveler's Wife, although a lot of the premise and everything sound very similar to that. But so, something if anyone wants to kind of seek out, I don't think there was only 13 episodes, so it would be kind of short. And I think they knew it was going to kind of end, so they were able to do that last episode with a little bit of a closure moment.
Okay.
So it's actually, you're not going to watch it and then go, what happens now?
You know? Right.
It almost has sort of a Quantum Leap sort of ending where the adventure is going to continue, but it's not so important that you follow it.
Got it.
Unless you really wanted to, like in Quantum Leap's case. All right, well, that's it for the feedback. I want to thank Paulie and Floyd for sending those in. Timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com or come to the Facebook group with any other comments, or I guess leave a comment on the blog post on the website because that worked for Paulie. With that, we are going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we are going to discuss the film Primer.
Okay, you know what it's like. You're flicking through Amazon or the local DVD shop when suddenly you discover a film that you haven't seen in years, but which you remember as being legendary. The purchase is hastily made, you invite friends over, make popcorn and settle down to watch this classic. But then it becomes apparent that your mind has double-crossed you, and that this film is frankly awful. Soon your friends have deserted you, your boss says he has to let you go, and even your dog won't come when you call. How did it go so wrong? Well, in the interests of public harmony, a new podcast, I Saw That Years Ago, sets out to watch the old films that your memory has convinced you are brilliant, but which in reality could be anything but. So join me, your host Martin Darkley, and my compatriot, Gentleman Joe, as we watch the old films so you don't have to. Find us at www.isawthatyearsago.com or on iTunes.
All right, we're back. Primer from 2004. Boy, you weren't kidding about you kind of compared it to Ink as far as budget and everything. This has got Ink beat. The budget on this thing was only supposedly about $7,000.
Right.
It was, yeah. And literally filmed in someone's garage. I think what Steve said, yes. And it's right. A lot of it
about
is.
About half of it.
About half of it filmed in someone's garage. Unbelievable. I finally watched it. This was the film that I had heard about. I'd heard everyone mention it. It was a time travel movie that every time travel fan had to see, and I hadn't watched it. I finally watched it. Yeah, this one was really good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this thing. How did you first come across it? Was it kind of the same boat where someone just – you kept hearing that people – you just needed to see this one?
No. I had never heard of it, and I was just flipping through Netflix suggestions. And there it was with that strange image of a box on it, and I was like, what – because I think it was like because you like time travel movies, and it was there. And I read the premise and talking about like two guys, you know – accidentally discover time travel, and I'm like, huh, when did this come out? How did I not hear of this? Oh, because it like wasn't really in theaters or anything.
No.
It just got made and got put out there, and they were lucky enough that like Netflix picked it up, and I think that really kind of that's really brought it more to the mainstream than anything. And I watched it, and it ended, and it's not long, but when it ended I went, I don't understand half of what I saw, but I know I liked it.
Yeah.
And then I watched it the second time, and it made a lot more sense.
I have been running this film through my head ever since I watched it, trying to really make sense. And like, okay, what did I miss? Did they miss something? Did I miss something? It's just been going through my head ever since I watched it. And it, yeah, like you said, it's still like I really enjoyed watching it. And I love the fact that it has got me – 2 weeks down the line after watching it, I'm still sitting here thinking, okay, So if they did that, you know, I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah, and you kind of go through what the characters go through, of thinking all the variables and, you know, what are we really affecting here. But how many times did you see it? Just once, or did you watch
it? I did. Unfortunately, you know, you'd think after all the time that we had in between recordings, I would have had more time to watch it than just the one time. But yes, I did just watch it the one time. But like I said, it's almost like I didn't want to go back and watch it because I was still
thinking about it
from the first time. Yeah, I was still kind of digesting it.
Yeah, I probably took a couple of months before I watched it a second time. I definitely recommend it. To get ready for this, I watched it for the third time, and it just gets better.
Yeah.
You notice more because you're in on what's really going on, and then you start to go, oh, I didn't see that the first time, which makes sense. Because the other character didn't see it either.
You weren't supposed to.
But then it makes so much sense when you're kind of in on it. And we're going to have to spoil this movie. You can't discuss it without spoiling it.
I knew going in that this was going to be a spoiler one.
Yeah. So it's a really simple premise. I love the idea of because it's essentially a two-man cast. There's a couple other people, but it's really just
they're peripheral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've got Aaron. And you've got Abe, and they're these two guys that work for like some kind of engineer tech company, but they're doing this stuff on the side because they're hoping to make like a big patent and retire early. And they're working on a device that would reduce the weight of an object.
Effectively anti-gravity. Kind of thing,
which I guess, you know, makes sense if they're thinking of, oh, just distributing things, like if it weighs less, then the truck will use less gas. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, or maybe we can make a hover car. Who knows? And they accidentally discover they've made a time machine, which is great because the writer of the movie,
Shane Carruth,
said, you know, if you look back, all the biggest discoveries in science have been by mistake.
Accidental. Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted to really highlight that, which is like, I don't think any other time travel movie has done that, where it's always somebody set out
right
to make a time machine, and they did, or someone was given a time machine. They're just sort of like, here, have this ring. You'll go whenever you want. And I thought that was really cool. And the other thing I noticed, and I didn't even notice it until I saw it the third time, no one says time travel or time machine. They call it the box, and there's that scene where Aaron is being shown by Abe that it works, and then Abe is saying, like, look over there, you're about to see something, I'm not lying to you, I'm not tricking you, and he sees Abe's younger self, and that's his way of realizing this is real.
Right.
And he takes him to see the machine, and there's no words. He just has this look of one part happiness, one part shock. Two parts horror, a little bit. And that's it. That's the whole scene. And I'm like, that's how you would react to realizing time travel's real. And that's all that needed to be said, which was nothing.
Yeah, I read some little bit behind the scenes, and Carruth had said in a couple interviews that it was important to him as he was writing it that he wrote the things and wrote everybody in a very realistic way. You wouldn't have people that would, oh my gosh, and you wouldn't have the big dramatic monologues, or I mean, it would just be people talking.
Yeah,
and that's really how he wrote the film. And he kept another thing I appreciated, even though if you didn't really understand it, what and how they talked was like two engineers.
Yeah.
And they talked very technical in places and not in all places. You know, they would use, you know, slang or can't think of the word.
Jargon.
Jargon. Thank you. And they didn't dumb it down for the audience. They kept it all very intelligent, but kept it very real.
Yes.
And that, I think, aided to a lot of the enjoyment of the film.
Absolutely. That was his intention. He wanted that. And it's something that we were saying last time where Steve was saying, you know, don't watch this movie tired or anything like that.
No.
It's hard to follow. And when I watched it just the other day, had my wife watch it with me. She was seeing it for the first time. And like after every like kind of big reveal, I looked over, I go, did that make sense? And she goes, No.
No.
Not that she's unintelligent. She was tired. That was my mistake.
Yes. That might be one of the reasons why I haven't had a chance to go back and watch it a second time. Is I finally had like a night where I could start it like at 9 o'clock and not 10 or 11 o'clock.
But now that you know it, it's okay to watch it sleeping.
Maybe a little later.
Yeah. That's all right, because now you're in on it and you can follow it. But you start to notice the little details like, oh, he's got that earpiece on. Because that's the other thing is when Abe figures out the time machine works and he goes to tell Aaron, this is future Aaron, mm-hmm. the whole time.
Right.
This is time travel.
The only part, and maybe a rewatch would help me out. That's the only part is how Aaron got back that far. Apparently there's been the failsafe box
yes.
that Abe started mm-hmm. as soon as he began the experiment, which was a secret box. So did Aaron just go back to a time that he knew that the failsafe box existed? Because he didn't know it existed in the beginning.
Right.
So did he just go back to a point where he knew that the failsafe box existed and then use the failsafe box? How did he get back to the beginning of everything?
Right. So Abe sets up the failsafe, and then there's that scene, the park bench scene, mm-hmm. where Aaron's like working, and he's got the earpiece in for the first time. And right. that's your way of, when you see it the second time, that's how your way of knowing this is future Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part where they show Aaron looking at like the logs for the U-Haul self-storage. He could see Abe had not one but two storage lockers, and he discovered the failsafe box. And they talk about a part where he folds one up and he takes it with him.
Right.
But I didn't really follow how that played. They don't show him setting it up and using it, or if like you go in a box in a box, if you go twice as far back. They don't really explain that.
Okay.
I don't know if it's just his way of, he just took one with him to use for his own purposes. But I got the impression that he got in the failsafe box before Abe, and he went back.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing is Aaron number two
right.
doing everything. And Aaron number one is in the attic the whole movie.
Yes. Yeah, got those rats up there. Mice upstairs. Okay, that was the one part that I, no matter what I could do, I couldn't figure out exactly how he got back to before it all began.
Right.
Yeah, obviously we didn't see it. We didn't know it until towards the end of the film. So I'm glad I'm not the only one that kind of thought, was a little confused on that. And that's one where maybe I'll pay more attention just to that. I think every question I have about the film, I'm going to have to like watch again to answer it and just focus on that one question.
Yeah, kind of works that way. Especially because when the movie ends, there's two Abes and there's three Aarons,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't pick up on until the third time I saw it.
Was there two Abes?
Two Abes.
I know there's an extra Aaron.
Yeah, there's three Aarons.
Oh, okay.
Because Abe goes back through the failsafe mm-hmm. with the intention of making sure his younger self and Aaron's younger self never tried the experiment.
That's right.
And he says,
okay.
I'm going to dismantle it. I'm going to mess with their numbers. They'll quit. So there's future Abe and there's past Abe. But the thing is, Aaron went back to the beginning twice. Because there was that whole thing where Abe's girlfriend's ex-boyfriend showed up to a party with a shotgun, and Aaron was like, I'll go back, I'll jump in one of our boxes that I set up, and I'll go back and stop him from mm-hmm. crashing the party with a shotgun, and I'll be a hero. And so he goes back and he takes out Aaron number one, and that's how Aaron number one ends up in the attic.
Right.
And so Aaron number two with the earpiece is the Aaron that we see through the movie. And then he discovers the failsafe. And then he goes back again. He takes out Aaron number one, puts him in the attic. Aaron number two shows up with his first time travel back, thinking he's getting Aaron number one, but he's facing off with Aaron number three. Aaron number three talks him out of it, and he even says in the movie, he just walked away. So Aaron number two is now gone. He's just wandering the earth somewhere. And the rest of the movie, we're dealing with Aaron number three.
Okay, I definitely need to rewatch this.
Yes, you do.
Because the previous Abe and Aarons, I figured their only role is to go so far as to get into the box, and that's where they stop existing. But you're making it sound like they've now overlapped each other so much that there are – yeah, now I thought I understood.
Right. It's really complicated, and it's why I like it, and it's why every new watch you notice something different. You know, it's just because you're getting so much information in such a short amount of time that I don't think you can process it all. And so when you go back and you're just sort of like, oh, okay, I get that now. Wait, what's that? That's new?
Yeah.
So yeah, dealing with how many versions of themselves are there was something that took me a while to grasp. But yeah, two Abes, three Aarons. And one Abe is living his life normal. The other Aaron is living his life normal. One Abe is keeping the other two from discovering time travel. One Aaron, we have no idea what he's doing. And another Aaron, he's somewhere in France with a big warehouse.
Yeah. Primer 2 coming to theater. Yeah.
Coming never.
Never. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
I was very surprised, just kind of jumping ahead a little bit. I looked at the writer, director, producer.
Editor. Music.
Shame Carruth. Really, this was his last directorial thing. He's done some acting, but this was his last directing. This was the last film he made. That kind of surprised me.
Mm-hmm. So I read that they filmed it in about 5 weeks.
Yes.
At a very impressive 2-to-1 ratio. But then it took him 2 years in post-production.
Yeah, I did read that.
So, I mean,
he said he'd been a couple times really close to abandoning.
Right.
Yeah.
And I can imagine just how much that, I mean, you figure he's got to be doing other things to make money. And so he's just working on this on the side. And, you know, he did the music too. And that was something I really loved, the music in this movie. Mm. Is it didn't tell you how to feel. It just sort of heightened the mood. And it was really kind of like retro feeling. It was just really simple but really good. And I'm like, this guy can do everything. He's doing really good music. He's doing great cuts. He's doing wonderful shots. He's got pretty good lighting that he's working with, because it's clearly low budget, but it didn't look cheap. Because they're just filming a house.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just filming inside an office or inside a hotel room or in the garage. And it's not like plywood sets. It's just life.
For someone doing this, and for this low a budget, the sound, like you were saying, the music, yes, it was good, because it was kind of music that it didn't really stand out to me,
right.
Which I think that's what a good soundtrack should do. It should be a part of the film, but when you're done, that shouldn't be the only thing you remember.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the sound, especially when you know that they are filming on the side of a road, and they're filming in the garage or in a warehouse. I'm guessing they must have done some post-production re-looping of the audio or whatever, because it sounds good. You can understand.
Yeah.
There's never that moment. I've seen some amateur films where the only audio they have is whatever they had when they filmed. And it sounds like It's awful, and it'll take me out. It doesn't matter how good the story is. It doesn't matter if they're trying to do something really interesting. It's like, dude, do some ADR. Get someone in the basement or something and do some ADR, because this is terrible. And so I guess they must have done at least that much in some moments, some ADR, or they actually really did have some decent equipment to actually record some good audio and get some good sound. Because like you said, it doesn't come across as cheap.
It
looks good. It sounds good. And that's one of the biggest things of any independent film at this level of budget. Sometimes you can make them look pretty. It's hard to make them sound good.
Right.
I mean, they did a really nice job.
Yeah, he's clearly, before he did this, he clearly had worked on film before. He knew what he was doing, and it was a wonderful finished product.
I'm still trying to wrap the multiple Abes and Aarons. I thought for sure we only had two of one of them, but now I'm thinking, yeah, maybe we do have extras.
Right. So was there any like particular scene that stands out for you? Anything that you were just sort of like, that was a good moment, or
nothing like that? There were some moments, some story moments that I found a little confusing, maybe. There was just the one moment when they're driving along and they see what I think is supposed to be like the father of the one's girlfriend, and he looks all like full beard disheveled, but he just saw him earlier that day and he was clean shaven, and they end up chasing him down and he gets knocked out. And that whole moment, I was like, well, why is that there other than to sort of build on a larger story, I guess, because it doesn't really seem to play into anything else. Obviously, this person learned about the box sometime in the future and came back, but we don't know why or how it happened and did it matter.
Yeah. I think that was just supposed to be, I think that's just one of those moments where the plot shows up a little bit, and that was the reason for Abe to go, we have to stop, because the variables were just spinning out of control for him, and that's when he was like, I'm pulling the plug on this, I'm going to make sure we don't discover this. But at the same time, although I guess not, because we see them go back, because I was going to say, there's got to be a timeline somewhere where that guy's just passed out in their bedroom somewhere.
Yeah, we don't know what happens to that
right.
guy.
Yeah, they go back, so I guess that is prevented from happening. But yeah, it's just one of those things where, because you've got Abe constantly thinking about every last possible scenario, which is a little tragic for the character because he doesn't know he's been undermined from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with error number two almost the entire time. And he's trying to, like, keep symmetry, and he's trying to make sure that everything plays out right because he doesn't want to, like, break the space-time continuum. And, yeah, he has no idea he's playing a rigged game right from the start.
I think the scene, and it's supposed to be this kind of a scene, is when you're talking, when Aaron, realizing that they need to stop, he takes out his past self. He goes to Abe to try to, you know, it's the moment at the park bench scene.
Yeah.
And he comes to him, and you can tell that this guy has just been put through the ringer. You don't know how many times. You get the impression this guy's tried to do something numerous times. He's on his, like, 54th hour day or something like that. And he comes to him, and that's the moment when you find out that this other guy had been sitting there listening to all the events. He's been like 3 seconds ahead of everybody because he's been listening. He's recorded everything that's happened, then gone back. He's sitting on the park bench. And that moment of realization for, I keep Abe and Aaron are too close to names. I'll keep having to look to see. that moment of realization that Aaron has at that moment. And it's just, that's it. He's broken and he collapses.
Abe.
Hmm?
Abe has that moment.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
See? There you go. I got them all backwards. Yeah, but that is a it's supposed to be that oh moment.
Right.
But boy, did they pull it off so well. Cuz if you listen close and everything, I think the earpiece even falls out of his ear and you hear what should it be the next line or cuz he actually answers him through the earpiece instead of what he actually Aaron answers the question that he had recorded in his earpiece rather than the question that Abe asks him.
Right.
And that's when it all comes together and all falls apart at the same time. It's like, whoa, that was good.
Yeah, and I think that was Aaron trying to keep time on its track. He answers, like, I don't think Abe even says anything. Abe is just, like, exhausted and looking around.
Mm-hmm.
And then Aaron replies to nothing. And then Abe is just sort of like, wait, you said what? And he's on the ground. There's a scene earlier in the movie after, you know, that first time we see the park bench, that scene, and you see Aaron with the earpiece in and you think he's just listening to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pay really close attention, there's a part where you hear a line of dialogue. It's just sort of imposed over the scene. And then 5 minutes later, you hear the line spoken normally.
Oh.
That was kind of one of their, like, fun little editing, are you paying attention? Kind of like a Sixth Sense kind of thing of, you know, you're about to hear a line that nobody speaks, and then you're going to hear the line spoken, and it's kind of their first hint that something else is going on here. And there's a few little hints like that, like when Aaron's ear starts bleeding.
Yeah. That was one of the ones I don't remember ever figuring out why that was happening.
I think it's happening because the stress of traveling through time is having on them. And you're supposed to wonder, like, well, why is it happening to Aaron first? Abe was doing this longer. And you realize it's because this is Aaron number two, and he's time traveling twice as long as Abe has been. And so he's getting the bleeding in his ear, and his handwriting starting to go. And it's just sort of these little things of like, yeah, we can travel through time. There's consequences, though, physically. Uh-huh. And it's just sort of there, and it's just one of those things that either you're going to pick up on is it's just the reality of the world they've created.
To say it's an interesting film, I think, is an understatement. I'm glad I finally watched it. I'm sorry that it took me this long to finally get around to it, as often as I've heard about it. For what are effectively amateurs all the way around, it's put together really well, just as a film. I mean, forget about what it's about or the story. It's just it's put together really well, which is something I really appreciate. Yes, there are many questions that I have after the fact, but I think that's good because that makes me want to go back and watch it to see if I can get those answers. And there may be a few that I never get answered, but that's okay too.
Yeah, I still don't know what the box in the box is supposed to be about. Maybe a fourth watch will help. I don't know. Maybe I should take to like a web forum or something. I'm sure there, because I have seen people who like have like these diagrams where everything's just like broken down and.
Yeah,
yes, that's to explain the time loop and how that works. I actually
needed
that.
The A to B time loop.
Yeah,
yes.
I needed that the first time I watched the movie. Mm-hmm. I saw that. I was like, all right, let me follow along with this. That helps.
Yeah.
The A to B time loop. But they explain it really well. They do a good job in showing the little like weeble wobble Russian doll
right.
thing was very helpful. So they do a good job of keeping it, you know, realistic feeling and with like, you know, hard science. But they still will kind of walk you through it. I think that's a benefit. But yeah, there's still just some parts where I'm like, what? Okay. I trust you.
Let me ask, was the person on the phone, the movie starts with a phone call, mm-hmm. and the person on the phone kind of fills in gaps for us, the listener. And I think he's supposed to be, he is calling Abe. Or Aaron?
It's Aaron on the phone.
Okay, that was my question. Was that supposed to be one of the guys? Because you couldn't really tell because it's a phone. It sounds
right.
like a phone call.
Yeah.
So it has that kind of raspiness of a landline phone call or
yeah.
whatever. So it was a little difficult to make out whether it was supposed to be one of them or not.
Yeah, that's Aaron on the phone. Who he's talking to? I always assumed he's talking to his original self.
Mm.
I think it's him filling himself in on everything. Whether to do something with it or just to have all of the information ahead of time, that's just how I interpreted it. I don't think he's talking to Abe because I think in his mind, Abe's not his enemy, but Abe is his obstacle at one point.
Gotcha. I'm having a hard time keeping the two,
yeah,
figuring out which one's which.
You needed to rename them there.
Yeah, they need to be wearing name badges. They need to work someplace that had a name badge. Couldn't they work at Best Buy? And now I'm trying to think if there's anything else. That was kind of the one thing is who was on the phone. That was actually a really great way to kind of fill in gaps that couldn't necessarily be told visually or told within the story without really dragging the movie down.
Yeah,
is by using that the phone. It's not the it's not the voiceover like in the Blade Runner that everybody hates or anything like that, but. It works because it works in it's in just the right places, and then it does fill in those gaps where you get to that point where you're starting to scratch your head, and then the phone comes in and explains what you just oh okay thanks thanks I needed that. But it was very very clever storytelling technique.
What did you think of the ending where he's in France and
oh the epilogue there?
Yeah, what how do you interpret that?
Obviously, he's continuing the experiment, and he's okay. They did it with a small little toy, on the shop desk. They did it with these boxes that you have to crawl into. So obviously, he is now trying to do it in a large scale, with multiple people, or even equipment, or what's to say you couldn't have this running for the next 10 years? Wait for some really great technological advancement. and then go into this warehouse.
Live for 10 years,
and then walk out and go, behold.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too. Like, and 10 years could be 1 year. Imagine what you could do with a year's worth of knowledge of just, you know, between stock market. Because that was that's the part that I love is, and I think
what do you do with time travel? Make money.
But not a lot of money, just enough, you know, because they're always like, oh, don't get the real big stocks. We'll draw too much attention. Just go right in the middle where it's enough that, hey, that's a profit, but not enough that, you know, people on Wall Street are going, how are you doing this every day? And I don't know if it was a film critic or if it was Shane Carruth who said, but you know, what makes these characters believable is what they do with this ability of, let's just make money.
Like,
it's not of, let's better our lives, let's better humanity, let's take over the world. It's like, let's just play the stock market, make a few bucks. And it's their personalities that really drive the story of Aaron being a bit arrogant, a bit me and the stuff I want to do, and Abe being paranoid and making sure everything's going to go right. And so he's kind of has the moral high ground a little bit. And Aaron's just more of, I want to do what I want to do with this. And,
right.
Because here he is at the end of the movie, even though there's another version of himself living his life normally, this is a guy who has effectively abandoned his family.
Yeah, yeah.
And he doesn't care because he knows what he's about to go do. Mm-hmm. And that's who he really is. And yeah, that whole warehouse scene, I'm just sort of like, he's become a monster.
A little bit. I like that the film, it puts limitations on itself, on the technology. Mm-hmm. And instead of feeling like it is held back by that, embraces it.
Totally.
You know, the idea that the time travel, you can't go any further back than when you first turned on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great little bit. Because, yeah, you can't, let's go back and look at the dinosaurs. You can't have that fantastic, what are you going to do with time travel? Go back and kill Hitler!
Right.
You can't do that. You have to have this limit, you know, within your life and with the life of the machine. That, I really, I like that aspect.
Yeah, I think that was a good way of just sort of, like you said, just limiting what they could do, just with the premise alone. And it was something that we were talking about last time of, you know, time travel is sometimes the gimmick. And, you know, when you look at a time travel movie, they kind of all deal with the same issue of, you know, what if this falls into the wrong hands, or, you know, what if we break the past? And this doesn't do that. This, like, breaks away from all of those cliched stories of just, what does this mean to the individual of the ability to just go back a day, a few hours of what could you do with that? And you see how one frets over it and worries about everything, and the other one just, like, just keeps rubbing his hands together and going, more money.
And I think it's really great is that, depending on how you use it, yes, you can go back 6 hours, you can go back 12 hours or whatever, and maybe you make a few bucks, maybe nothing. Maybe it's just like, ha, I traveled through time. How about that?
Yeah.
Or you can actually do irreparable damage to your life.
Yeah, exactly.
That was awesome. How dangerous is time travel? As dangerous as you make it.
Exactly. Which is a concept that I never had seen in a time travel movie, that it's really just going to affect you, and that's it.
Or those immediately around you.
Right.
Maybe, depending on how you play it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love the how they, you know, they have to turn on the machine and then disappear for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's because their future selves are going to show back up in the past. So they just hang out in a hotel room, and you see them, and they're just bored to death.
Exactly.
You know, doing the paper wad in the garbage can. You know, reading. You know, they can't go anywhere. They can't do anything for fear of maybe someone they'll bump into someone they know. They'll bump into themselves. So they just hang out in this hotel room for hours at a time. I thought that was pretty funny.
Right. And that has my favorite scene of the cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wait.
Oh, I forgot to turn it off. Like, you know, oh, like, does your other phone, is that ringing? If you've got the same phone twice, like, no.
Like, how do cell towers work? Does it go to that phone first before,
It's like, are you sure
does
that's
it go
how
to
works?
Both phones?
Are you sure that's how it works?
I don't know.
They were good at peppering.
So you were supposed to take that call, but it wasn't, it was kind of funny because it wasn't an important – I think it was just his wife calling to ask him something, you know, about dinner or something ridiculous like that. So it wasn't anything important. But it was still, like, well, so you didn't take that call that you took earlier, and now you took it now here, and how do cell towers work?
It's like, how do you feel? I feel fine. Like, he's worried he's going to disappear.
Yeah, that was fun. It was a good time. Excellent movie. I would definitely recommend checking it out. I know, you know, that's what's fun. We have spoiled it to death, and I still think you could watch and not feel like you've been spoiled.
And so much goes on, and it's presented in such a way that even with everything we've said, you'll be like, oh, okay, I still don't get it.
Yeah. I have a feeling I'm going to watch this a few times and still kind of like, nope, still not sinking in. And I will be watching it again because it is this, like you said, I watched the first time when I was wide awake. Maybe now I don't need to be quite as attentive, and I can watch it a little later. And it is only an hour and 15 minutes or something like that.
78 minutes, I think is what it is. But the credits aren't that long.
Yeah, so it's a short watch. It's, if you got time to watch a TV show kind of thing, you've got enough time to watch this. Absolutely. Well, next time we talk, Floyd, it's funny that you brought up the film Time After Time. We are going to discuss that the next time we talk. I think you've actually gone ahead and watched it or started to watch it.
I watched it.
I've got my copy. I haven't watched it yet. I've seen this one before, but it's been a long time since I've watched it. And I can't wait to discuss it, if nothing else, because there is one line in the film that I cannot wait to talk about. But we'll wait till we, till we record. That is going to do it for us. Any other comments or feedback, send it to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com or come and join our Facebook group. Matt, thank you very much. Thanks for finally bringing Primer to the to my life. And it's a great name, too, because now every other time travel, this is like the primer for every other time travel story that you're ever going to watch. That's going to do it. Thanks very much, everyone. Thanks for downloading, and we will talk to you next time.
See ya.
Bye.